Thank you, Phil. I'll let you know, I'm a research forester with the USDA Forest Service, the Northern Research Station. Now, I do have a background in both forestry and soils, so I really get excited about doing research that integrates those two disciplines. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that today, and I have a host of co-authors that have helped with this. So I want to talk about forest composition and dynamics and point out, as you probably are well aware of, it's closely linked to soil and site characteristics related to the supply of light, water, and nutrients. The soil is a major player in providing nutrients and water. And I have a couple figures to illustrate that from some master's work that Josh Stevens completed a couple years ago in central Missouri. And it shows in 30-year-old clear cuts, so after some time has elapsed since we've harvested the stand, it's wide open, light's not really the limiting factor here, but you can see the soil's base saturation, if I can illustrate that with a pointer, down here on this axis, is strongly related to the abundance of sugar maple in those central Missouri forest stands. Sugar maple, if you don't know, is a calcophile. It does very well when you have high levels of calcium and magnesium in the soil. This helps it overcome drought, resist disease. It's very important to have high calcium concentrations and magnesium concentrations in our soils, and you can see that effect there. And if we look at the growth of sugar maple, it turns out that the single most important site variable was the available water holding capacity of that soil. That explained the greatest differences in the mean annual increment of height. And this might look like a trivial difference in height, but compounded over time, you start to see some big effects of these differences in growth rate caused by both base saturation and AWC. And so what this is, these diagrams illustrate height growth reconstructed through stem analysis. We cut up the stems, you can reconstruct their height over time, and you can see here that where the AWC is quite high, that sugar maple will actually grow at the same rate as our oaks and be a competitor in the overstory. But under conditions where the AWC is quite low, if I can make this work again, you can see here that it's slowly falling behind in growth, and sugar maple will actually be present and be very abundant in those stands, but it's relegated to the understory or midstory. So it's not competing for overstory space with those oaks. I'm going to spend a little more time talking about oak regeneration to illustrate some other work that we've been doing in the state of Missouri. Oaks are widely distributed. There's 500 species worldwide. There's 90 species in North America. I work with about 30 different species in eastern North America. They're highly valued for both habitat, for timber, so there's a lot of people that are very, very interested in oaks. But there's an issue with oaks, and that's regenerating them has become a big problem, primarily through eastern North America, and actually worldwide, on high-quality sites. And as you can imagine, high-quality sites are those that have high water and nutrient supply. And the mechanism that's been identified is that the high water and nutrient supply allows oak competitors to be very competitive and displace those oaks from those stands, or at least compete effectively for that growing space. A lot's known about oaks and their physiology that helps us understand what's going on ecologically. They're disturbance survivors, disturbance survivors because they build very, very large root systems. So they spend a lot of time, especially early on, and as a seedling, developing a large root system. And this allows them to be good disturbance survivors. If they lose their top to, a fire or if some animal browses them, they've got a big reserve of carbohydrates to put up a new shoot, but it causes them to have a very slow juvenile height growth rate. So they grow very slowly at a young age. They're not particularly competitive on sites of high quality because those species that have a very exploitive growth strategy that are not limited by water and nutrients are going to put on a lot of shoot growth very rapidly. So instead, oaks rely on stump sprouts and also on advanced reproduction. And advanced reproduction are the seedlings and seedling sprouts that are accumulating in the forest floor over a long period of time in a mature forest. And in that process, what they're doing is they're growing a little bit, building root system, and dying back, growing back, building more root system, and developing a big root system that gives them the ability to respond to a canopy opening. And this oak advanced reproduction density has largely been identified to be inversely related to site quality. Now, I say that very qualitatively because most foresters haven't really looked at this in great depth. Most foresters that I know are kind of afraid of soils and don't really like to work with them because they find them very intimidating. But so there are a few attempts to link actual measures of light, water, and nutrient supply to oak advanced reproduction abundance. And so we asked the question, can we do that? With actual data and actual measures. So to do this, we relied on some data from a study called the Regional Oak Study. It's actually initiated by some partners of ours in the Southern Research Station, also working with the state of North Carolina. They're very interested in regenerating oaks in North Carolina, those very mesic sites in the mountains. And the study comprises three locations. So we have Cold Mountain in North Carolina. We also have sites in the Cumberland Plateau in Tennessee and in the Ozark Highlands, which is on the Asincan Experimental Forest. Four treatments that are common to the study, so these are implemented on all three sites. Give you a feel for what this might look like on the ground at each location. We have five reps of each of these four treatments. These are on 5-hectare experimental units, or about 12 acres, so fairly large units, and they're oriented so they have some gradients in water and nutrient supply. And you can see the green dots in these little squares, the red squares, these are permanent vegetation plots where we monitor the vegetation, the response to the treatments. For this modeling of oak regeneration, I'm going to use some pretreatment data only. So it's in the undisturbed forest, so the advanced reproduction has been accumulating over a long period of time. We have lots of site data, and at the Missouri sites, we actually did very detailed soil characterization on each of those 120 plots to a depth of 1 meter. We also collect all kinds of vegetation data, the regeneration, the trees. We have tagged trees. We measure things that are related to that, canopy closure, light levels, PARs, the photosynthetically active radiation. The modeling actually turned out to be simpler than I ever expected. I didn't realize that we could make models this simply for some of those complex processes happening in forests. So the model form looks like a regression equation, where Y is the oak seedling density and stems per hectare, and the Bs stand for parameters that are related to nutrients, water, and light availability. I'll show you some of these models so you get a feel for what they look like. These are four different models for estimating the density of all oaks in trees per hectare. Four different models are shown here. The parameters on top, beta 1 is the pHW, or the water pH. AWC is the available water holding capacity. T aspect is the transformed aspect. We use a Beer's transformation to take a circular measure and make it linear. TSI is Henry McNabb's terrain shape index. It describes the shape, convexity, or concavity. So the negative numbers are convex, positive numbers are concave. Level areas have a numeric value of about 0. And we've also measured PAR, photosynthetically active radiation, used that in these models. So each of these models is considered a hypothesis about how these factors affect the oak reproduction density. We use the AIC scores and weights that we calculate to as indicators of support for each of these models. And I have a red line here to show you that model number 4 actually has the most support because it has the lowest AIC score and the highest weight. And it says that one of the most effective model given our data set is a model that includes just the water pH and the available water capacity. And we can also substitute different variables in these models to test their efficacy. So, for example, we've also tested things like the base saturation or other metrics of nutrient supply instead of pH, but typically the pH tends to have the greatest support for it. So you can take some of the data and actually plot the model results to give you a feel for what the data look like. So we have on the y-axis, we have all oaks. This is the oak advanced reproduction. This is the water pH on the x-axis. And you can see as you increase the pH, you make the site richer, your oak reproduction actually decreases in density. And as the site AWC increases, we also decrease the density of the oak reproduction. And it's really because a lot of other species are becoming much more competitive for those growing spaces under high pHs and high AWCs. We've also generated other kinds of models. We have models for large oaks. Usually in forestry, we're very interested in the density of the oaks that are greater than a foot or even 2 feet tall, because these have the biggest root systems and are going to be the most competitive when we do a harvest. And for large oaks, the models include PHW and the AWC, but also the aspect effects. So our south-facing slopes tend to produce oak seedlings that are much larger than our north-facing slopes. The nice thing about these data and these models that we're generating is that we can link them back to Surgo data. And so the figure on the left shows the density for all oak reproduction. The figure on the right is for large oaks, and what we did is I linked those models back to the soil polygons from the soil survey. This is an area of the Sinkin Experimental Forest where we generated these models, and you can see on the soils up here, and these are projected in with the soils. This is where the oak reproduction is quite high, and you can see the areas in green show where the oak reproduction, advanced reproduction, is quite low. On the right, I also show this for the large. In that case, I said that the slope aspect was really important. We developed a terrain model, overlaid it with the soil data, and were able to generate aspect classes or aspects that we could then link with the model and make some projections. We wanted to do a little bit of validation of this model to see how accurate it would be. And so the line here shows a line of perfect correlation. And this is the actual stem density in this axis and the model in this axis. And you can see in some cases we did a pretty good job of predicting with our models. In some cases we have some clinkers. But I think overall it was pretty effective. We used some seedling data from an independent study done in this experimental forest for the reproduction. And we actually generated the pH and AWC with the Sirgo data in this validation. So I haven't really mentioned scaling, and scaling is a big theme of this symposium. But you can see there's a lot of things that are going on here when we develop and apply these models. So I have a locally derived model, and I will say I don't know the transferability of this model. I haven't tested it elsewhere in the Ozark Highlands, for example. I haven't tested it in the Southern Appalachians. So there's that unknown, and it's linked to the Sirgo data, right? So Sirgo data uses pedons or profiles to generate information that are linked to soil map units, and then groups of soil map units to make a landscape. So the accuracy of the application of our models depends on many, many places in scaling. So I'm just going to go ahead and conclude. So that our data indicated that oak advanced reproduction abundance can be modeled using soil pH, AWC, and slope aspect. And there's some evidence that site information can be obtained remotely from the Sirgo data set for making these estimations. The transferability of these relationships to other ecoregions or within an ecoregion remains unknown. And the reliability depends on the quality of the soil survey. And that's all I have.
Thanks, John. We have time for a quick question, if anyone has one.
For the indices for the regression model, how did you summarize the soil properties as far as density? Are those like full set on?
Yeah, so that's a good question. We've done it a number of different ways, but the data that I showed is whole profile. So we do a weighted average of the profile. And we had a lot of discussion about what's the best way to approach that, and we elected to do it that way because even if you have large variation within your profile, those trees are integrating that over time. The larger trees are pulling up nutrients, for example, and they're cycling them. And so there's an influence over the entire profile, even if some parts have more or less than other parts of the profile. So we thought the best way to handle that is to have that profile level estimate.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.